Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush back with you again after a bit of a hiatus. Phil, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm alive and well, and it reached a 50 degrees here, and like the 3 feet of snow we had in the yard is starting to melt, so maybe we're turning a corner, unlike Marquette.
Yeah. Boy, it's been a hell of a 2 weeks for your boy here, and it really hasn't had much to do with Marquette at all.
Yeah. The better question is, how are you, Joe? You've had some things.
Boy, yeah, I've had some stuff. Doing great. Doing fine, by the way. But, yeah. So, you know, as many of you know by now, long-time listeners, short-time listeners, whatever, you know, I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We had a bit of a winter storm last week. That's why we did not have a podcast last week. So last week I was juggling the excitement of trying to work from home while power on, power off, repeatedly for hour on, hour off for about 4 or 5 days. Didn't have water for a few days, so that was a thing.
Good thing you have three toilets in your house, right?
Yeah, without going into too much detail, when you don't have running water, your toilets will work once each, and so you got to manage your time. And fortunately, without going into too much detail, I made it until the water came back on. So that was good. And as I'm recording this podcast on Saturday, I had a heck of a night Friday night, Saturday morning, because this intoxicated woman, shall we say, found her way to my front porch at about 1 in the morning. And I had to call the police. They had to come out and, you know, take care of her, and it was a heck of a tale. And I guess I'll share a little bit with you before we get into, you know, basketball stuff, because responses to what do you guys want to hear us talk about on the pod
was anything but Marquette basketball.
Yeah, like the overwhelming responses wanted to hear the story of what happened on my front porch Friday night, Saturday morning. So I'll just share this with you briefly. So, you know, I was up, you know, over 11:30. Like I may normally would be on a Friday night, and getting ready to go to bed, and I heard like a whining sound outside, and like I just thought it was a cat, because you know how like, you know, a cat can kind of sound like a person.
This is why cats are, you know, evil and awful, and not to be trifled with.
Exactly. So I didn't think too much of it, because there have been stray cats in our neighborhood before, and so I just think, yeah, stupid cat, I'm gonna go to bed. But you know, about an hour or so later, as I'm lying in bed, just kind of tossed and turning, this whining gets a little louder. I'm like, man, that is really loud. And then I definitely hear some words. I'm like, well, that's either a talking cat or there's a person outside. So either way, I've got to check this out. And so like I can't get a good angle, because it's definitely coming from my neighbor's house, not coming from my house at this point. So I don't have a, like, looking out my front window, I don't have a good angle that I can see what is on my neighbor's porch. But plus it's dark on top of that, so I'm just kind of like peering out my window at this weird angle, see if I can see a person. And after a little while, I do see a person out there. I'm like, God, there's a woman on my neighbor's porch. I've never seen, I can't even make out who she is at this point. But I'm like, well, there's a person out there who is whining and making noises and kind of sounding incoherent, so I should probably call the police. So as I'm about to get my phone, yeah, I'm kind of following this girl through the window, and like I'm thinking, she finally leaves my neighbor's house. I'm like, oh, maybe she's going to wander back to wherever she came from. But then she goes to my other neighbor's house. So instead of the house on the right side of my house, she goes to the house on the other side. And she's like knocking on my neighbor's door. This is like, you know, 1:30 in the morning at this point.
And you're thinking bullet like, dodged.
So, yeah, like, well, now she's like obviously not going home. And like I text my neighbor at the off chance they are either A, awake, or B, maybe they would have their phone not on do not disturb, and maybe that would wake them up. I said, hey, there's a girl on your porch knocking on your door. I'm going to call the police. So I did. But as I'm talking to the police, she gives up at my neighbor's house and then comes back the other way, and now she's on my porch. I'm like, great. So now it's my problem. So I'm like just talking to the police, and I have a Ring doorbell, which is great. I got that for Christmas, and so you, if you have a Ring, you know, you can kind of, you can, on number one, just monitor what's at your front door, and two, if you want to, you can talk to whoever's at the front door. It's like a speaker. And so, you know, I get the speaker out, I turn the speaker function on, and I try to talk to her and say, hello, can I help you? Do you need some help? And she just did not respond. She didn't move. And so, like, I'm also on with 911 at this point, and they're sending the house. They send everybody. You know, I to be clear, I don't live in, like, a downtown area where, like, this woman would have stumbled in from a bar, like, a few blocks away. Like, I live out in the kind of the suburbs of North Fort Worth.
Yeah, you're like a suburb of a suburb, right? And, yeah, like, not a bad suburb either.
Yeah, like I don't live in, like, Highland Park or South Lake or anything. It's I live in it's a nice suburb. What they call the affordable part of the Metroplex. It's a quiet little community with nice houses and families and single family homes, and I'm in the townhouse portion of their little. So there's not a bar within walking distance of my place, is the point I'm trying to make here. So it's not like she stumbled out of, like, a bar or something. So I have no idea where this girl came from. I'm calling 911. I'm on the phone with the police. They send, you know, fire and ambulance. Fire truck gets here first, and while I'm waiting for the fire and ambulance, like, I don't want her to, like, walk away at this point and all these people to show up and there's nothing there, because obviously she needs some degree of help. But I'm also not going to go outside in case, you know, maybe she's crazy. But you know, if she finally answers me, I finally, like, say hello, can I help you? And she says, she kind of turns around. She, like, again, she's definitely disoriented. And she can hear a voice, and she says hi, and that's when I kind of say, can I call someone for you? And she's like, no. I'm like, what's your name? Where do you live? And she didn't respond to that. And she finally said, well, I'm Danielle. And I'm like, can I call somebody for you? And she's like, no, I'm gonna, no. And then that's when the fire truck shows up, and, you know, the EMTs start talking to her, try to get a name out of her, and, like, she's only wearing one shoe. Well, she's wearing no shoes. One shoe is on my in my sidewalk, and she's walking around they go to my neighbor's house to find her other shoe and some socks. And then finally, you know, this probably lasts for about an hour or so, and they finally take her away, and I hope she's all right. But the bottom line is, she did get some kind of help last night. She was in an ambulance for, like, an hour before the police took her away and took her downtown. They said, yeah, we're just going to take her downtown, let her sleep it off, and hopefully she's better in the morning. So this poor woman, I say girl, she's like, she's probably in her early 30s, I guess, but she probably woke up at a police station this morning and had no idea how she got there, because she had no ID on her, no phone. She's just, you know, wearing a sweatshirt, jeans, and she had shoes and socks off and on. And she was barefoot when the police showed up.
Did you check if she was friends with, like, Zach Galifianakis, or, like, it was part of any kind of wolf pack? Like,
she was not answering any questions at all. Like, I got her name out of her. Like, she said her name is Danielle, and I could not get any more information. Like, if she had given me her address, and I could have, like, Google mapped it and seen, oh, well, she, you know, she wandered out from this house four doors away, let me just kind of escort you this way. But now she couldn't tell me where she lived, or, like I said, I have no idea how she got there, because she must have been at somebody's house nearby and just stumbled out of there and found her way to my house.
The crazy thing is, this is, like, from our days at Marquette, this is not something that, like, where we lived and stuff like that. That's not, like, terribly unusual. Like, this wouldn't be, like, a crazy story. But the fact that this is in, like, outer suburbs of, like, a subdivision that's not near any commerce of significance... Like, is someone, like, that was partying at a house and ended up staggering out and ending up at a different house. Like,
without any kind of identification.
In a pandemic! In the middle of a pandemic!
Oh, yeah, she was not wearing a mask, by the way.
Reason to stay in your house. Ma'am, whatever diseases you have and whatever, you know, materials you have consumed can remain outside of the home. Thank you.
Yeah, so... Again, so she did get at least some degree of help, and hopefully wherever she is, she's feeling much better, and I hope I never see her again. But if she does, well, that'll be in a part of a future podcast.
what if she listens to this podcast?
Well, then, boy, I hope she, you know, emails the show and tells me why in the hell she found her way to my house.
She got hammered and decided, I really need to understand where that show originates. It's my favorite podcast.
Yeah, all total, like, yeah, so I first heard, kind of heard the whining when I went to bed at like 11:30, and the police finally took her away at like 2:45. So, so I didn't actually get, like, much sleep at all last night. I mean, I slept in a little bit on Saturday to kind of make up for it, but still, you know, I can't sleep till like noon on Saturday.
So you were totally prepared for that UConn game.
Yeah, I was. So, you know, I got up in time to, you know, make some breakfast, clean the house a little bit, do some work, because I am working from home, do some work that I was behind on, and then tuned into the UConn game, which was,
That didn't go well.
Didn't go well. And, yeah, I don't know if I want to bury the team too much, because I think we've done it enough for the season, but before we get to the UConn game, let's say something nice about the team, shall we? Say something positive. That win against North Carolina was pretty darn good.
Yeah, you know,
it was a high point in the calendar year 2021. Not maybe the high point of this college basketball season for Marquette, but it was a nice win. I know it's not a typical North Carolina team, although they did go out and beat Florida State on Saturday. North Carolina played terrible, but that's not Marquette's problem. Maybe Marquette caused that problem. But, you know, in and of itself, great game, great effort. Dawson Garcia played great. I mean, the whole team played good to great in that game. Glad to see Greg Elliott get a start and play well. Again, season as a whole, not what we're looking for. But that game, nice job. Not really going to crap on it at all, because it was a good effort. It was a good game. Yeah, it was a nice win.
And it was enjoyable. And even the usual Twitter snark about, you know, just wait for the second half adjustments, just wait for the inevitable collapse. I mean, they flirted with it a couple of times, no doubt. But, you know, Roy Williams, for whatever reason, decided that 6 or 7 possessions in a row of a full court press resulting in 4 turnovers, that was not something he wanted to replicate. So, you know, Marquette was able to pull out the win. And again, it was probably the most complete victory that Marquette has had, certainly since the conference season has started, you know, given the level of competition, right? Like, one could argue the Butler win was a complete victory. But, like, let's be honest, Butler, not great. North Carolina is at least competent. So,
They're a tournament team. Despite losing to Marquette, they're still projected to make the field at the moment, especially now after they beat Florida State Saturday. So they're probably in pretty good shape for a tournament bid. So yeah, I mean, they are a decent team, not a typical North Carolina Final Four contender, but to go to Chapel Hill and beat that squad of mostly 5-star prospects, I mean, if you go by recruiting rankings, I would just ballpark there. You know, if you go to the top 10 players of that game by recruiting rankings, I bet 8 of them played for North Carolina. You know, so that team was more highly thought of than Marquette, no matter how you want to spin it. And they went there and beat them soundly.
Right. Mind. Yes. It decisively, though. Reese Davis several times tried to jinx it, and also was trying to channel some of the Marquette faithful, but I don't know that he was totally capturing the zeitgeist of Marquette when he was saying they're a little wary. And I think I, not to self-promote my tweets, but I think I said, Reese, we are more than a little wary. We are major wary, but they got the win. It felt good to feel good about Marquette for those couple of days, right? Like, it wasn't at no time. And this is why I'm not really necessarily upset about the UConn loss and not necessarily caring to spend a ton of time about it, because, like, I was already in the mindset that there is no chance, you know, sooner a chance that the woman that was on your porch remembers what happened last night than Marquette makes some sort of run to get into the tournament. So my expectations were low. The North Carolina win, simply icing on the cake on an otherwise not good season.
Yeah, I like to make the analogy of, I know you play golf, Phil, better than I do, but You know, you play golf, and
yes,
I certainly have my rough rounds of golf, and it's like when you play that round where you're just lousy all day. You know, you're bogey here, bogey there, double there, triple bogey here in the water, yada yada, and then you get maybe 15, 16, and you just hit that one incredible shot. Maybe it's a par three and you land it, you know, right near the cup, or maybe it's that second shot on the par five that gets you on the green with a shot at an eagle, and you finish out that hole for a birdie. That doesn't change the round as a whole. You still stunk all day. And it also doesn't mean that you're not going to, you know, put it in the woods on your very next shot on the next hole. But in and of itself, that one birdie, you could celebrate that one.
Absolutely. So
that was a good one.
Yep.
That's the one that that's the one that keeps you coming back. Say, yeah, you know, I think I'm figuring it out. I think I'm getting there. But
and then Wojo put it in the woods off the 17th tee against UConn.
Wojo absolutely put it in the drink. As for the UConn game, it was good to see Justin Lewis back. I'll say that.
And in a decidedly more physically ready form than the last time we saw him, where we thought his leg was going to fall off during the game. So
he seemed confident in limited minutes. And, again, I would not even bet a nickel that Marquette makes any kind of run in the Big East tournament, but that's the last thing you have to cling to, so you might as well plan for that. If Marquette's going to do anything in a Big East tournament, they're going to need Justin Lewis at 100%. So it's good to see at least he'll, you know, barring any setbacks over these last two games, he'll be there, and we'll get a Justin Lewis's best effort, and we'll see what happens, you know, these last few games or whatever. But it's good to see Justin come back, because there was the way Wojo was talking about him, you know, before the North Carolina game, it sounded like he might be done for the season. Not that it's a career-threatening injury. It's just there's only so many games left, and there's just, you know, if he's out 2 weeks, that's a season-ending injury at this point. But good to see him back. Dawson continues to play well, in the second half of the season, and he and Justin are certainly something to, you know, be excited about going forward, I guess. But overall, just the offense never got going as a whole against Connecticut. And, you know, I think based on what we've seen from Wojo coach teams in general over the last few years, a letdown after that nice win over North Carolina was probably inevitable, and we got pretty much exactly what we expected.
Yeah. I mean, Wojo has, outside of the one season where, 2019, where, you know, was one game away from winning the Big East title, Wojo has demonstrated throughout the 7 years at Marquette that he has no ability to sustain success, right? As soon as expectations start to rise, he nosedives below them. Which, again, at this point, I'm eh. I've stated time and time again where I am on the Wojo era and when I think that era needs to end. And I'm just kind of playing out the string. But I would ask this question of you. What do you kind of make of the Kobe McEwen, we'll say demotion, right? Like that's big picture wise, that's an interesting development, right?
Yeah, I would say maybe a few games too late, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe has, since the Providence game on January 12th, Kobe has had one game with an offensive rating over 100, including a number of games where it was below 70, including a putrid 48 against Butler, a 58 today, a 71 against the loss against Creighton. Kobe's been struggling, man. As good as he was early on, like he had some really great outings. Early in the season, his offensive rating was above 100 in all but two games leading up to the Villanova loss. So he had been playing really well. It looked like he was probably going to be, you know, Marquette's top offensive option this season. But once he's gotten to Big East play, man, he's really hit a slide. And I think I think his confidence might be shot at this point, and it was just time to try something else. Again, probably too little, too late. It's not like you're saving the season at this point by getting more minutes for Greg Elliott. And as much as I like Greg, he's probably not a season-saving type player anyway. But when he's on, Marquette can be a little tough. I mean, when he's hitting his outside shots, that's a nice bonus for Marquette. But he's still not a lead guard, right? He's a nice supplemental piece that you need other guys around him. But just because Kobe had been playing so poorly, it was time to give somebody else a chance. Let's do the Greg and Jamal show then. So, I would guess Kobe's probably done starting at Marquette. He's just going to be a guy off the bench now, and that's probably the right move. It's probably not going to lead to anything meaningful for the team because, like I said, they've only got two or three games three, four games left in the season, most likely. So, probably came too late, and I wish Kobe was going to get right. And get in the mode he was in December, where he was really shooting the ball well and really playing well. But he's just not there anymore, and I think it's too late to kind of salvage anything from Kobe this season.
Yeah, I mean, the trend has been there for a while, right? And you know, someone made the comment on Twitter, it's hard to bench a senior. There's no doubt, but like, this isn't, you know, the trend that was going on this season didn't come out of the blue, right? Like last year, Kobe had his struggles. Those struggles were accredited to a certain leading scorer in Marquette history that was on the team last year. That player is no longer on the team, and yet the struggles continued again. Like, this is not meant to bag on anyone on the team in particular, but that's where the coaching staff needs to be the adults in the room and say, look, you know, this program is highly important to the university. Players in certain roles are not meeting the expectations or the outcomes that we need. And make a change. To your point, I think it's an important. I think it's the right change. You know, I certainly applaud Kobe for taking in stride, playing hard, staying with the team. Right, like that's we've played competitive sports. That's not an easy thing to take in stride. But I also think that it's a change that should have come a long time ago. And I think it is just an example of where the team and the coaching staff just seems to be three steps too short, too slow. I agree. I don't think like Greg Elliott is a season saver, but Greg Elliott playing, 25 to 32 minutes a game since, mid-January, maybe that saves the season, right? Like,
he could be kind of just like a stabilizing element in the lineup. He's not going to like lift everything up and like totally be a superstar first team, second team, Big East player. But when things are going poorly, you got to get what's going poorly out of there and just get, go from below average to average, right? At least. And, that's an improvement. And I think that's what you kind of get when you take Greg and put him in over a struggling Kobe, because when they made the change, because Greg started against North Carolina, right? And
yes.
So, at that point, Marquette only had two wins in its previous eight games, both of those wins over a terrible Butler team. So it was crystal clear it was time to change something.
Right.
So make a change. And so they did, and it worked against North Carolina. It did not work at all against Connecticut, but it's not that effort against Connecticut is not on one person. Now, Connecticut just kind of stomped Marquette. They're just way better.
Yeah.
The offense just never got going. But still, it is the right change, and I expect that we're going to see the Greg and Jamal show in the starting lineup for the duration. Again, probably only three or four games left, but at least maybe you have a chance in those three or four games.
Now, what do you make of Wojo kind of lengthening the bench over the last, let's say, five, six games, right? Like, Dexter Okano has not been seen. Oh, I'd have to go back and look, but has not been seen in at least five or six games. But Jose Perez has gotten double digit minutes in five out of the last six games. Samir Torrance, similar, right? Like, has played five of the last six games in double digit minutes. The productivity out of that time has not been great. Do you apportion that to, or you know, do you segment that to just it's a long season, we need to have more players now because players are getting tired and there were injuries? Or what do you credit towards the sudden resurgence of the Perez and Samir Torrance experience?
A couple things. By the way, to answer your question, yes, Dex has not played the last two games. He did play just spot minutes in the Butler game, two kind of garbage time minutes. He played 4 minutes against Seton Hall, five against Nova, and he didn't play against Creighton. So, yeah, we've barely seen him the last six games. But to answer your question, I think it's twofold. Number one, it is kind of a long season, and you know, Marquette has been dealing with some injuries with Oso and Justin have been out. So, you know, let's get some other guys in there, and so we're not just rotating five or six guys. You're not just rotating six guys. Just get some other guys in there. But another thing is, you've got to be in the mode of, we got to plan for next year, and let's see if, like, these guys we have, are they going to have a role for us next year, or do we need to recruit over these guys? You know, if you know, that may not be something you say openly, but it's something you probably need to know. Is Jose Perez going to be an answer in the rotation next year? Yes or no? Let's give him a look. I think maybe Jose maybe had been a little injured, or
I think he had lingering COVID impact, because
yeah, so maybe it is maybe it is a thing of him getting healthy. But at the same time, with Samir, Samir's a big one, right? Is he an answer to you in the guard rotation next year?
No.
Or do you need to recruit over him? You know, if you need to recruit over him, then that's what you got to do. Because I think Wojo's got to be naive if he thinks his seat's not getting warm. He's got to know he's got to do something of note next year, or it could be his last year, very likely. So he's got to take a good look at this bench. I'm sure he would love to get some minutes out of Oso if he wasn't hurt, and so he's just got to evaluate Oso on what we've seen. And Oso's, you know, a part of the future to some degree, but when it comes to guys like Cy and Dex and Jose, yeah, I think you need some answers there. Do we need to? Are these guys good enough, or do we need to clean house? Like I said, recruit over them. If that means they transfer, then so be it. It could be them or me at this point, right? If you're Wojo, it's like, you know. So he's got to get a good look at everybody, and if you decide some of these guys at the end of your bench are not going to help you win games next year, in a year that is pretty much very likely going to be make or break for Wojo, you got to make some tough choices. And so I think that's part of it too. Let's get a good look at everybody we're returning, and decide yes or no, we need them next year. DJ, obviously yes. Dawson, clearly yes. Justin, clearly yes. You know, Greg has a year of eligibility left. I would assume if he wants to come back, then he would be welcome back, you would think. But then, you know, and also a young guy who you think you would assume you're committed to. Everyone else, yeah, I you know, if they're not helping you this year, how much are they going to help you next year? You got to figure that out right now.
Right. Well, and what's interesting is, like, if we look towards 2021-22, right, next season, again, assuming next season is something closer to normal, we have two
open COVID-wise.
Yeah, COVID-wise. Right. Like, okay, we're in the new normal now, right?
Yeah. When you say normal, I'm just making sure you don't mean like normal Marquette basketball when they're good. You meant normal as far as America.
Yes. Go ahead. Normal as far as like I can leave my house whenever I would like. And I can.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Yeah, yes. I was joking about when I finally got electricity and water last week. I said, "Well, I'm back to normal." Well, you know, COVID normal, not actually normal.
Right.
So I was just thankful to have, you know, electricity and running water, so I can go out in my mask when I need to go to the totally empty grocery store.
Right. By the way,
so hilarious to see.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so hilarious to see what is left in the grocery store when it's been cleaned out. Boy, you know, people do not care for the plant-based meats. you know, they're certain, you know, they love their frozen pizzas. Those are all gone. There wasn't a slice of bread in the whole damn place. But yeah, that, you know, sorry to get off topic.
No,
to what you were saying.
You know, I one comment on your situation last week. Boy, You had like just a touch of third world country for like a hot.
Yeah, place. Again, that is that. Hopefully, that is the closest I ever come to living in a third world country, where the 36 hours where my power was going on and off every other hour, and I had no running water. I was very close to having to melt snow to get a toilet to flush, but thankfully I didn't get there. The water came back on before that became a thing.
Wow.
So,
yeah, good times.
Yeah, that it. Yeah, but yeah, so hopefully we're, as you were saying, hopefully we're back to normal next year, and...
Yes, and so if we look at the roster for next year, right? Like, so, like, we're assuming Jamal, Theo, and Kobe don't come back. Some of those players were kind of hoping for that. They will remain nameless. But we still have...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they still have two open scholarships for next season, even without landing anyone else, right? But you do wonder, like, so when you look at the roster, let's assume that Jamal, Theo, and Kobe are gone, right? Though technically they could come back as COVID super seniors. But that leaves you Greg Elliott, Jose Perez, you got DJ, you got Samir, Dexter, Dawson, Oso, Justin Lewis, and then coming in as freshmen, Jonas Adu, Cameron Jones, and Stevie Mitchell. From like a roster makeup standpoint, you don't have a ball handler you trust. Like, I like DJ Carton, and when he's on, like, he's really on, right? Like, we saw that in the North Carolina game, right? Like, I think I even made a reference that, like, why can't DJ Carton play like this DJ Carton all the time? But I don't know that he is your 100% of the time, every time, your primary ball handler. Like, his handle is just too loose to be your primary ball handler. So Wojo's got to go recruit a ball handler. He's probably got to recruit a wing, especially if Jamal Kame doesn't come back. If Jamal comes back, which I would love and I strongly encourage, but you got to do what's good for you, Jamal. Marquette needs a wing. There are the two open scholarships, but then you got to get depth. And I don't think we can have another year for Dexter, I suppose. But Dexter, Samir, Jose Perez, even, right? Like, are they doing anything for this team long term other than eating 5 to 7 minutes in games that don't matter? We don't know what Oso has to offer, right? Like, there are some concerns about this team regressing next year, even from this year, right? Like, and that is why Wojo's seat should be really hot, is there is no path currently that tells me next year is at all even on the same level as this year, let alone better.
Yeah, see, right? That's the thing that, you know, some people have said, you know, as far as, dude, how can you not be optimistic about the future? This is a, you know, this is a young team and they're only going to get better. Well, what do you call this young team when you lose three seniors? Like, are you under the impression they're more experienced next year? Granted, the key guys that everyone loves, Dawson and Justin, And DJ, yes, they're all a year older, so you're starting a junior and two sophomores. That's fine, you know. And you know, when your sophomores are as good as Dawson and Justin are, that's good. But your seniors, as it's slated right now, your only senior is Greg, right? He'll be a fifth year senior.
Right,
that's correct, right? There's no other juniors on the.
Yeah.
Yep.
No.
And so, Jose Perez. Well, I guess technically he gets a COVID year.
Jose.
He's so COVID. Yeah. Jose is technically a senior next year, but he could have a COVID year and stay another year after that. So,
So good, Greg. And, honestly,
yeah, that's true. And Jose, is he a starter next year? I don't think so.
No.
And so, who are your starters? And you would think Marquette would have to be. Either these incoming freshmen are going to be awesome, or Marquette has got to be really active on the transfer market and, like, begging whoever the best guy out there is, and it could be an open market, guys who don't have to sit for a year, so it's not just grad transfers you're shopping for. they should be very active trying to find a replacement for Jamal in the starting lineup. So that's they need to be shopping because again, as excited as when he asked me why am I not that excited about next year, number one, because who the coach is, and number two, I don't think they're not going to be as experienced as you think they are, because you're losing Theo and Jamal and Kobe. So you're losing a team that's that starts three seniors. You're losing all those guys, and we'll see what Greg decides. I'd love to have Greg Elliott back for another year, but he has been in college 4 years now, and so he could be a true grad transfer, I would think, if he does graduate this year. So we'll see what Greg decides, what he wants to do. Maybe he wants to go play, try to see what his pro options are. I'm not saying NBA, obviously, but you know, he could go the Brendan Bailey route and just see what's out there for him. If he has his degree and he's had enough college basketball, that's something you got to brace for, right? By the way, one other thing on the wing, Marquette, for what it's worth, is in the top three for a small forward from IMG Academy named Cordell Charles. He is a 2021 guy. He announced a top three of Illinois, Marquette, and Tulsa. So that is a possibility to add on the wing for next year. He's not like a top 10 guy, or he's not like a super highly rated. He's like top 150 or something, but you're asking options on the wing next year. Maybe they add him.
Yeah, they could, but you know, and that would be good.
But again, that's probably not taking like you from bubble team to, you know, Sweet 16 team, right?
Right. That's well, here's the thing. Like, so if we land him, he's the only wing on the roster.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the roster as it currently sits, right? Stevie Mitchell, Cameron Jones, Samir Dexter, DJ Carden, Greg Elliott are all guards, right? And I am not questioning the quality of the guards, but they are all guards. Dawson, Oso, Justin Lewis, Jonas Adu. I forgot Jose Perez would be a guard as well. So Dexter, Dawson, Oso, Justin, and Jonas are all front court players, right? Some combination of four or five. The recruit you mentioned is would be the only wing. So we have two openings. So to really play that three spot, we've got to bring in two players. Are you going to bring in two freshmen to cover that three spot? I don't think so. So you got to go in the transfer market. Yeah. But you're spending your last two open spots on wings, which is the biggest necessity. However, you still don't have a primary ball handler, right? So I think what I'm trying to say is the writing should be on the wall for some of these players that they're going to get recruited over if Wojo is serious about retaining his job.
Yeah, you would love for Dex to be that guy, right? But it's hard to say he is right. That guy. And yeah, there are only so many spots, and you do have some needs next year. And you're not just filling those needs with freshmen and continue to pitch the "we're young and building" mantra, right? We've been young and building for 8 years, you know, 7-8 years now. Wojo and this staff need to take a step forward next year, and to do that, they probably need some experienced players. So, I would, if anybody who's getting minutes off the bench this year, you better show something wow, or else you're probably getting recruited over this offseason, because Marquette needs it next year if they're going to be relevant. Because, at the time we're recording this film, Marquette is in 10th place in the Big East. I know you say, well, some teams haven't played as many games, yada, yada, whatever. You're going by winning percentage. 10th place. Big East tournament started tomorrow. They are the 10 seed. That's not...
And Marquette is like, since if you paused when, I believe it was Providence, when Marquette was a game away, the end of the Providence game, when Marquette was a game away from, all they had to do was win 1 out of 6 to win the Big East regular season title. And Marcus Howard got injured. Marquette is, since that moment, has like a 41% winning percentage in the Big East over 2 1/3 years. That is bad. The team is getting significantly worse while bringing in arguably comparable talent.
Yeah, if not better.
I don't think the talent has gotten worse.
For what it's worth, granted that like no one in the Big East really brought in any All-Americans or lottery picks this year, but the fact is Marquette did have the number one recruiting class in the Big East last year. Yes, with Dawson, yes. And with Dawson, Justin, and Oso, that was the number one recruiting class in the Big East, and they're sitting at.
And DJ coming in as a transfer.
Exactly. And they are, despite that, they are 10th in the Big East right now. And over the last 2 years, yes, they are one of the worst teams in the Big East. I think record-wise, over the last 2 years, the only teams worse are Georgetown and DePaul.
And we don't want to be Georgetown or DePaul.
No, we don't. And Marquette needs, right? Marquette needs two wins in these, or not two wins. I think Marquette needs at least one win this week to avoid finishing 10th.
Well, they need a win and help to not finish. They're a game behind Georgetown, and they have two games this week. I believe Georgetown has two as well. So if Georgetown wins one of their two,
Georgetown has Marquette, Xavier and Connecticut.
Okay, so and Marquette has DePaul and Xavier.
Right. For what it's worth, Georgetown is a dog in both games.
Yeah, and Marquette is a dog in the – shockingly is not a dog in the DePaul game. At this point, I should just assume Marquette is a dog against DePaul because just, you know, they're our nightmare fuel.
They are. They are.
You know, but like that's the thing. And we don't want to like get into doom and gloom, but like – so here's the deal. So everyone that's talking about, like, we've got a solid base, we've got a lot of good recruits, we've got a lot of good young talent, we just need more time. I'm not disagreeing that Dawson Garcia, Justin Lewis, even Oso at some point, we haven't seen him really play, but certainly DJ Carton, Dawson, and Justin as a core could not be more excited about those three. I think they're going to do lots of great things at Marquette if given the chance. But the problem is that next year they are surrounded by yet more youth, yet more unproven talent in year 8 of the Wojo era, right? And at no time in the Wojo era have I ever been convinced that Wojo can stack success on top of each other. So with the glaring holes at the three, the glaring holes at the primary ball handler for next season, We know Wojo's not going anywhere this year. It's too expensive to fire
right.
him. So he's either going to have to pull a rabbit out of his hat, contrary to all trends that Wojo's era has ever set, next season, or at the end of next season, we'll be looking at a result that's similar to what we've had, maybe not this year, but certainly last year. And that will then be year... what, 10? Well, I guess next year would be year 9 since Marquette has won a tournament game, and would be year 8 of Wojo underperforming expectations.
If Marquette added 3 All-Americans tomorrow, I'm still not sure I would be, a quote-unquote, excited about the future until I saw Wojo. Correct. Until I saw Wojo do something with those All-Americans. It's you know, like I don't even get excited about recruiting anymore. Okay, so you know, Jonas Adu, he's now a top 30 prospect. Cool, awesome. I can't wait to see what he does. Looking forward to it. I am not buzzing and jumping about the future just because I've seen what Wojo has done with guys who are similarly ranked, similarly talented. I can't get excited about the future until I see Wojo do something with the talent he has. That's where I am. Yeah, like I said, Patrick Baldwin is the number one recruit in America. He's not considering Marquette. If he shocked us all and committed to Marquette, wouldn't change much for me because I want to see what Wojo could do with talent, right? Because he had the most incredible scorer in Marquette history, our all time leading scorer, and just an electrifying talent. Didn't win anything with him. Sam Hauser is going to be first team All ACC this year. If not in the running for ACC Player of the Year. didn't do anything with him. In fact,
and had him and the all-time leading scorer for Marquette on the same team.
Yep. And a borderline five-star right. prospect on top of that in Joey Hauser. Couldn't win with him. Right. So I can't get excited about the future based on the staff that's in place. That's where I'm at. And so, yeah, we got two games left. We're going to ride out the storm, see if they shock us at all any of these last two games. My expectations are low just because that's where I'm at, because DePaul is a house of horrors. And then, you know, maybe the Xavier home game, maybe they pull something out there and get a win there. But am I excited about the future? Sorry, I'm not. I'm just not. I would love to be. I love, and the thing, I love the players. That's the thing I struggle with. I balance. I really enjoy watching Dawson Garcia and Justin Lewis play, and DJ Carton, when he is on, he is electrifying. He is so fun to watch. I still can't get excited about the sum of the parts. Haven't been in a long time, so that's where I'm at.
Well, I agree, and like even if you look at this year's roster, right? Players I love watching: DJ Carton, Dawson Garcia, Justin Lewis, Greg Elliott, Jamal Kane, Theo John, right? Like, maybe that's not a nine-deep roster, but those are players that have the correct mix of talent and experience and youth and whatever you want to call it. But again, in the Wojo era, once again, the sum of the parts is greater than the actual whole that he's able to produce, mm-hmm. right? Like he makes less out of more talent than any coach I've ever seen in the Big East, you know, because DePaul is at the bottom of the Big East standings. There's some talent on that DePaul roster, but if you look at DePaul's roster versus Marquette roster, it's night and day. Like, DePaul would kill for Marquette's roster. And yet, we are finishing next to them in the season.
Yeah, like, I don't know how many players on DePaul's roster Marquette recruited or offered. Probably very few, if any.
Right.
Maybe Paul
Reed.
Maybe there were a couple that they would have recruited or offered or something, but not many. Whereas the other way around, I'm sure DePaul would have loved to have anybody on Marquette's roster. And that's...
Right. Well, and even more damning, Georgetown. Right? Georgetown had an exodus of talent over the last 2 years. And still, Georgetown is likely to finish again ahead of Marquette in the standings.
It'll be close. But yes. The fact that Georgetown and Marquette are basically at the same level right now is discouraging.
Right. Very discouraging. And let's be frank, Patrick Ewing, not a good coach, right?
Like, but might be better than Wojo.
Correct. And again, this is not us, like, we spend our free time recording a podcast about Marquette basketball. We are invested in the program. We want the program to succeed. We are not, I am, like, annoyingly optimistic about a lot of things. Like, this is something that's known about me. I was annoyingly optimistic about the Wojo experience and Marquette until about a year and a half ago. Frankly, I should have turned during the Hauser, you know, issue, or the Hauser exodus, right? That's when I should have turned on Wojo and Marquette. But I was wildly I wrote an article, and I don't like writing. Like, I wrote that a season and a half ago about how Wojo's figuring this out. This is not something I'm easy or comfortable doing. I am not doing this to troll the fan base. Like, Marquette is in a bad position, and it's the coaching staff. It's not the talent. It's not the investment in the program. It is flat out, Marquette has the wrong coaching staff for the program. And unfortunately, through both circumstance and internal decision-making, they have backed themselves into the corner where we're going to have to ride this coaching staff for at least another season. And I have no anticipation of them being able to perform any... The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I have zero reason to believe next year will be any better than this year. And that bothers me.
You know,
That's where this comes from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I forget who said it, but somebody else on social media was saying it. You know, people like you and me, Phil, who complain and gripe, we're really not the fans that Marquette needs to worry about, because when things are right, we're going to come back because we care and we are invested.
Right.
The fans that they should be really worried about are the ones that have said, oh, did Marquette play today? I forgot. I've stopped watching. I just can't watch the team anymore. I'm sorry. I have better things to do. I'm just not going to watch Marquette basketball. The ones you're losing, the ones who are apathetic, those are the ones that need to be concerned about. And that's what my concern is going into next year, even with the hopeful joy of having the pandemic restrictions lifted and being able to have full arenas again. I'm not sure Marquette will have a full arena if Wojo is still the coach. Because it's just hard to, like, even though, like, fans should be really excited, all right, we can go to games again, let's go to games again, I'm excited, let's just go to a game. Like, maybe they might sell out the first game, because it's the first one, or whoever the first big home opponent is, I guess UCLA, that would be UCLA next year. Maybe they'll sell out that game, but, you know, another slow start, I think fans are really going to check out, man, and...
Right.
And stop watching and stop following and donations take a dip. Those are the fans they really need to be worried about, is the ones who just don't care and the ones who say nothing because they don't care.
Yeah, it's the quiet ones you got to worry about.
Yeah, because like they've checked out. You know. They're just not into the program anymore.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be playing in an empty Fiserv forum before too long. And that's a consideration they're going to have to make in the next year or two about whether they're going to make a move. Because, you know, how are we ever going to make money off this program if nobody's watching it, if nobody's paying attention to it, if nobody's attending the games or going to fundraising events? That's a problem. So, yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah. And I think it's just a reflection on reality, right? And again, there's talent. Like, Dawson Garcia is the real deal. Like, I mean, we should probably spend a minute talking about the fact that he has a very real chance of being player of the year. Now, what hurts him is that
player of the year,
Marquette is not any good as a team. Or, excuse me, freshman.
Okay, freshman of the year, yes.
Freshman of the year in the Big East, right? Like, no, his team is not good. In fact, they are terrible.
And that's why Posh Alexander
is going to drag on his candidacy.
And that's why Posh Alexander is kind of leading the discussion, because he plays for a team that's overachieving. And he also, playing in New York helps him too. But still, the fact his team is overachieving, Marquette's is under, is the really only argument against Dawson. But I always have a brief Twitter discussion with Paint Touches on this. The list of freshmen nationwide who are outperforming Dawson Garcia is really short. Yeah, I mean, he's not the best freshman in America. I mean, obviously, Cade Cunningham is unbelievable, and Evan Mobley at USC is awesome. Jalen Suggs at Gonzaga is great. Dickinson at Michigan has them in, like, one of the top, you know, picks to be in the Final Four behind Baylor and Gonzaga. But, you know, the list, you could count the freshmen on your hands who are having better seasons than Dawson Garcia. Because, you know, the Blue Bloods,
right. They
don't have a whole lot to offer as far as five-star freshmen this year. They have some good players, don't get me wrong. But Kentucky and Duke and North Carolina's freshmen, they are not outperforming Dawson Garcia. He is playing better than all. They may all go higher in the draft than he would, just because on potential, because they were top 10 prospects and Dawson was like a top 30 prospect. But based on production this year, I think I would take Dawson Garcia over any freshman at Duke, Kentucky, or North Carolina.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and Dawson, like, with the exception of Seton Hall a couple of weeks ago, Dawson, since, you know, the end of January, has been on a tear offensively and has been average to above average on the defensive end, right? Like, you know, Dawson has been contributing. He scored... let's see, going back to St. John's, he scored 20, 14, 8, 28. Seton Hall was a stinker at 0, 12, 24, and 18. Like, he has been a dominant offensive presence for Marquette, even though he has seemingly not been featured by the coaching staff, right? Like, Dawson's almost kind of getting his points on the side. He is not, like... The player by which
I think he's offering. Really starting to get his confidence as far as playing the paint. He's going to get even stronger, especially with hopefully a normal season of off-season conditioning. I think we've got 1 year left of Dawson Garcia, because I think after a full year of off-season conditioning and he gets stronger and gets better defensively, and if that offensive game continues to progress the way it has, I think he would probably be in a position a year from now that he could go in the draft, and he can go on to the NBA. So, but I embrace it. I'm just in my mind, I am just thinking we've only got 1 year left of Dawson because he's that good.
Yep.
So, and I think a case could be made. He could be a freshman All-American. I think he's right there. I think there's probably just maybe one or two too many that maybe he would be of the top, one of the top five freshmen. But I think it's close because, like I said, Cade Cunningham's going to be on there, Mobley and Dickinson and Suggs. And then it's going to be, you know, Dawson maybe enter the mix, might be entering the mix right around there, is if you're, who's your fifth freshman All-American. There are probably a few more that I'm forgetting that would probably might get in line ahead of Dawson, but he's right there. He's been that good in my mind. And if maybe he was the featured guy a little bit more, maybe he might have a few more stats to kind of pad, especially if his team won a little more, then he would at least be a little more prominent in the eyes of maybe some people who decide these things. But Dawson's had a great year, and I hate that it's been kind of, don't want to use the word wasted, but I can't think of another word. It's been kind of just lost in a season that has probably fallen short of expectations. Not probably, it has. Even the kids and the players in the locker room would say, we did not set a goal of finishing 10th, and that's kind of where they are right now. So this, even the own team would tell you, and Wojo would tell you, we're not where we want to be, but that doesn't mean Dawson doesn't deserve some praise because he's been really, really good.
Yeah, and again, I think Dawson, Justin, when he's been healthy, has been valuable. DJ Carton in spurts has been fun to watch and contributing to the team. So it's not without positives. It's just like you said at the very end there, we clearly have not lived up to expectations. And I think people are fooling themselves if they're telling themselves, hey, this is a young team, we'll build on this for next year. There are pieces that are young, but the vast majority of this team is actually quite old, and you know, and quite honestly courting arthritis at this point. You know, Theo John playing through all his injuries.
There are young players. And, this is not a young team.
Correct. And next year, the pieces that leave are not replaced by equal or better talent. So, to think next year will be better than this year, even in a 10th place finish in the Big East, boy, that's
yeah. I look at it this way: you're losing Theo, and as promising as Adu is, I don't think he would have the impact in his freshman year that Theo has, especially not defensively. He may be better offensively than Theo, but I think you're missing something with Theo going away. Whatever freshman is coming in to play in Jamal Cain's place is probably not going to be better than Jamal has been. And as up and down as Kobe is, the likelihood of you finding a guy who can score at Kobe's level, even inconsistently, right? Even like who can hit the highs that Kobe hits, is probably hard to see, right? Kobe has had his rough games, but when he's been good, he's been really good. And the idea that one of these freshmen or somebody you're going to find on the transfer market is going to be at that level is small. So yeah, if you want to call this as a young team, fine. But next year's team is going to be younger and probably less talented overall. So what are the expectations next year? Yeah, we fell short. Fell short of the expectations we set this year. The expectations were not that high. It's not like you and I were here in the preseason saying they should win the Big East and go to the Sweet 16. We weren't saying that. We were saying roughly 500, right, maybe a bit above, hopefully make the tournament. They're a little below that. Even if they win these last two games, they would fall short of that. They would be right at 500, and they would be 8-11 in the Big East. That would be below what we had set forth. So, bummer, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
So you think they get any wins this week or nah?
No, I actually don't. I think they fold like a cheap table at a Buffalo Bills tailgate.
I think they collapsed like a drunk on my front porch. I think we will actually see a fight out of them this week, but I'm afraid it won't be enough. Just because Marquette is so much better than DePaul, but they always play so poorly against DePaul, I feel like a fool predicting a win in that game, so I don't feel good about that. Maybe at home. They're going to have fans there. It looks like it's going to be family and students. That is good. I like that. Because I think those seniors deserve that for their senior day. I wish they could have an arena of 18,000 fans screaming and cheering for them and saying thank you for all you've done for the program. I wish all those seniors could have that, but they won't, and that sucks, but that's just the way it is. But at least their families will be there, be able to cheer for them. They will be able to hear the applause from the student section. That is great. I hope that propels them to a nice W on Saturday, but I just can't predict it right now. So I'm just predicting Arby's for everybody this week. But I do hope that I really want them to get – I mean, I want them to win both. But, I would really like to see them get a win in front of their families on Saturday against Xavier.
Yeah, I want wins for both of them. I just – again, I think the North Carolina game was probably the high watermark during the Big East season. And
if only it was a Big East win. Dang it.
Right. If only it mattered.
Big East is better than the ACC. But, I'll die on that hill.
I tend to agree, but yeah,
whatever.
We're not the podcast for that discussion. But it's certainly the high watermark of the post or of the 2021 portion of the season. Again, no sustained success. We've seen this story before, right? They had a nail biter against St. John's, proceeded to just lose to DePaul in inexplicable fashion, turned around against DePaul after that loss to DePaul and scored 18 in the first half against a not good Providence team, right? Like they string their negatives together. They don't string their positives together. So I fully expect to take this beating against Connecticut and string it into two more losses so that they go limping into the Big East tournament. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they win two games in the Big East tournament, but they're not winning. At maximum, they win one game this week. Probably none is my guess.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, too. I'm just hoping they could scratch out one more win, and if I can only have one, I would say let's screw it to lose to DePaul, but let's win at home for Xavier just for the senior day's sake. But whatever, we're just kind of running out the clock here, and then we could, we kind of came into this podcast not thinking we're going to do a deep dive on Wojo and the future of the program, but the conversation always steers there. But that is going to be obviously a big source of off-season content. I don't want to go into any more than we already have, because basically as much as we talked about it, that was an effort to not talk about it. But it just keeps...
We held back there.
Yeah, it just keeps coming up. But we'll do more deep dives on the program in the future and things like that when we get in the off-season. We'll just run it out. Cheer for the boys. Hope they get two more wins, and we'll just do the best they can and just enjoy March Madness as it finally returns, because, God, I've missed it. But March is here.
Oh, I have missed it desperately. So we won't have Marquette to cheer for in it, but you know what? Damn, it's good to have March Madness back.
I saw there's going to be an NIT. Like, why?
Oh.
It's interesting that they said they're going to – they're going to do backup teams, though. And I was joking – before the Connecticut loss, I was kind of joking, what if Marquette is a backup team? And, gets in because there's, enough COVID situations that they need a replacement. And, had Marquette won out, they still wouldn't have made the tournament. But maybe they got in a position where you go, four or five deep on COVID replacement teams. And, did you see, how they're going to do it? The rules for it?
Right.
Let's say, for example, Duke misses the tournament. Okay? So they wouldn't get in. But they're a replacement team. And then, let's say, for example, the number two seed Ohio State has a COVID situation and can't play. Well, Duke slides into that two seed spot. So then all of a sudden, Duke, who wouldn't have made the tournament, is a two seed. And they get a 15. So I was just kind of joking, what if that happened to Marquette, and that's how Wojo gets his first tournament win. They,
he plays a 15.
Yeah, a one seed goes out of the tournament. And so Marquette, as a replacement team, gets a 1, and he gets to play a 16, and he wins a tournament game. So The other caveat
that would be amazing. Yeah,
the other caveat is like to avoid the possibility of the opposite happening, like say a 16 seed gets a COVID situation, like the replacement team would not become a 16. So like you wouldn't want a situation where Gonzaga is playing Duke in the first round. That would suck. But it like if an automatic qualifier goes out, that league gets to pick the replacement. So for example, the SWAC champion has a COVID situation. Well, whoever the runner-up was, the SWAC could appoint them to take that team's place. So the top seeds are still going to get their layups in the first round, is what I'm saying. So that's good, I guess. But hopefully there are no situations like that. But it seems like inevitable that there will be at least one or two teams that have to bow out because of a COVID situation.
Right, but Marquette's got to be what, like 37th on the list of replacement teams?
Yeah, they're way back there now. Like the only way they would have even gotten in the discussion would be if they won out. So if they beat Connecticut, beat DePaul, beat Xavier, don't lose your first round game in the Big East tournament, and maybe lose to Villanova on the way out, then maybe they are in the pool of replacement. Maybe. I think even then it's like Alan Bukowski was going to do an article about how close could they possibly get, but then he just hit the big old delete draft button on that when they lost to Connecticut. Because, there's no prayer, none at all, of an at-large getting in at all. Marquette's all in on a miracle Big East tournament run. That is the only hope of March Madness for them, and thus that would be the only hope of even getting an NIT bid, which I don't think how many people would even want to play in an NIT, honestly.
It's insane.
I'm not just talking Marquette either. I'm talking nationwide. I think they would look at the NIT similar to the way college football teams looked at non-playoff bowl games. It's like, why? Like, we're exhausted. It's been a rough season. Why do we want to go through a few more weeks of COVID protocols so we could be, play for a chance to be the 69th best team in the nation? Who cares?
Yeah, I'd sooner bow out again, mostly because I want to avoid the whole cheap Wojo tournament victory. Yeah. Right?
Don't want that.
Like, why tarnish that record? Yeah. Be proud of that record, Wojo.
Yeah. Hey, they did make they went like two or three games in the NIT a couple years ago, I guess, but. Again, who cares?
Yeah, they went to the quarterfinals in the NIT.
Yeah, hopefully we never do that again, but we'll see what happens.
I'm not interested.
We'll see what happens. Hey,
yep.
We've been talking a long time. Should I share any more drunk or no water stories, or should we just wrap this thing up?
Well, I was hoping to filibuster this till about 11:30 to see if any humans like
If she comes to the door, I'll let her in and maybe she can finish the podcast with us. But hopefully
that would be great. And now Danielle from Fort Worth, your thoughts on Wojo?
No comment. We appreciate your feedback, folks. We appreciate you listening to us. I know this has been a longer podcast, but we do have fun doing it, despite all the Arby's we consume. We do. For better or worse, love Marquette basketball.
Alcohol helps.
So hit us up with your thoughts. We're on Twitter. I am JoeMcCann3. Phil is MOOOF23 at Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post a podcast there. You can leave your comments on the website. Please also remember to rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And we even have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well, if that is your thing. Phil, enjoy your week. Hopefully we get a couple wins here and maybe we can just have some kind of silly positive spin going into the Big East tournament next week, and then March will finally be here.
Hey, if Marquette wins two games, it'll be like you going a week without having a stray / human show up on your porch.
It would be like a full week with electricity and water.
Yeah, able to flush your toilet at will. Beating DePaul and Xavier will feel
not
like.
Having a flush budget, I have to manage my flushes. Running water is great. Until next time, seashells, balloons, everybody.
Oh my God, we got to end on that note. Oh my God.